Maseres HaDibreis, and we're talking about Zachas Yom HaShabbos L'Kadshei, the fourth of the Dibreis. Remember to keep the Shabbos, to keep it holy. You will remember that we cited a Pesikta, where the Pesikta makes a number, draws a number of parallels. In the first case, it tells us that in order for us to understand the Aseres HaDibreis, we have to recognize the companion Dibreis. Each Dibur on the one side has a companion on the other, and that there's a relationship between Anoichi, Hashem Lekecha, I am Hashem, your God, and Leisirtzach, and you shall not murder, that there's a relationship between Le'yilecha, Elohim Acherim, you shall not have any other gods, and between Leisinov, you shall not commit adultery, that there's a direct connection between Leisisa, you shall not bear the Hashem's name in vain, and Leisignai, you shall not steal, and we talked about that at length, how those are connected. And now there is a direct connection between Zachar, as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadshei, and the Dibur, which is opposite it on the other side, which says Leisane V'Re'acha Et Shaker, you shall not answer or testify falsely against your friend. So, to bear false witness is a violation of one of the Aseres HaDibreis, and the logic of this connection is explained by the Pesikta. As Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, if you bear false witness against your friend, then I considered it as though you testified against me that I did not create the world in 6 days, and that I did not create the world in 6 days and rest on the seventh. Now there's another variation in the Mechilta.
How does that follow?
What? I just give that to Hashem, says, I consider it as though you did not testify, because the Shabbos is a testimony. We testify by keeping the Shabbos that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. So if we bear false witness against a friend, and Hashem says, then I consider it as though you bore false witness against me, and I did not rest on the Shabbos day after having created in 6 days. The Mechilta says just the opposite way around, that whoever violates the Shabbos bears false testimony against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the connection of thou shalt not bear false witness against your friend, because it's by violating the Shabbos, desecrating the Shabbos, you're bearing false witness. So that's one connection that the Pesikta makes. Then the Pesikta goes on to make another connection, that the Aseres HaDibreis are all connected to the Aseres HaMamoreis. And we spoke about that at great length, that this, the Ten Commandments all have a companion utterance which was responsible for bringing the world into being. Zachar, the fourth Dibur, fourth commandment, is connected by Yemer Leikim Tad Shei Ha'aret, that Hashem said during creation that the world should be clothed in vegetation. And The psikt explains this, as Hashem says, whatever you eat on Shabbos, uses the word maikir, which I assume means that with what you eat on Shabbos, you honor Hashem. And he says, the world was created so that people would not sin and that they would live forever and eat that which grows from the earth. And of course, initially, the Torah tells us that Hashem told Adam, Hine nosati lachem is called Esav Zerea Zera Asher al pnei kol haaretz. I gave you all of the seed-bearing plant. I've given you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the earth and every tree that has seed-bearing fruit. Lachem yeliachla. That's what you should eat. Man initially was not allowed to eat the meat of an animal. So there's a connection over here, albeit a somewhat obscure connection, between remembering the Shabbos and the utterance of Vayim Ralekim Tachi Oret. So we now have two parallels. One is the parallel between the fourth commandment on the one side and the fourth commandment on the other side, which is Shabbos on the one hand and bearing false witness on the next. Now we have a parallel between the fourth of the Aseret HaDiburot and the fourth of the ten utterances which brought the world into being. In this case, the fourth utterance brought vegetation to being. And the Psikta also says that there's a connection between the Ten Commandments and the Ten Plagues. And Zachar, remembering the Shabbos day, is paralleled by the fourth plague of Arav, the mixed hordes of animals, different wild beasts and birds that invaded Egypt and caused a great deal of harm and injury and damage. And Psikta goes on to say, Leisare v'lidein chayla v'shabbatu kechad. You shall not mix and judge the week and the Shabbos the same. What? Leisare, you shall not mix, v'lidein and judge, chayla v'shabbatu kechad. The weekday and the Shabbos as though it were one. So we have now the third parallel, which is that between the fourth commandment and the fourth plague. All of these things beg a little bit further or greater clarity, and perhaps we can explore this correspondence a little bit more. There's a Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara says as follows: Darash Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. Chanina bar Papa gives us a drash. Yichved Hashem li'elam. May the glory of Hashem be forever. Yismach Hashem b'masav, and Hashem should rejoice with his the work of his hands. Pasuk zesar elam amrei. This pasuk, this praise, this exclamation of praise was made by the Sar Ha'elam, one of the highest of the angels. When did he say it? When Hashem said in the act of creation, Leminehu, at the trees, that's what he said. When he created the trees, he said, now, and God said, let the earth send forth vegetation, seed-bearing plants, eitz pri eis pri leminai, and a fruit tree that would give forth fruit according to its kind on the earth. So then it says, that the earth gave forth vegetation according to its kind. Now, there's a little bit of a discrepancy, because when God commanded the earth to give forth vegetation, it did not mention the word leminoi or lemineo. It did not say according to its kind or its species. It only did so, God only did so when he spoke or when he commanded about the creation of trees. Eitz pri eisa pri leminoi. So the Gemlon and Chulin here says, Nasu deshoim kal v'chema ba'atzma, that vegetation enacted a work of logic on their own, of their own, as it were, free will. And they said as follows, Im ritzayne shalak kodesh baruch hu b'yavuvya, if the Almighty's will, if the Almighty's favor would be that the world should be all mixed up, so then why would he command the trees that each should produce according to its own species? Moreover, if the trees, who generally emerge at a distance from one another, distinct of one another, are commanded to come forth each in its own, according to its species, how much more so the different forms of vegetation that sprout together, that they should reproduce only according to their kind. And so, they said, if the trees, which are distinct and distant, were instructed to reproduce such that they would only propagate according to their own species and their own kind, then we, alachas kama v'kama. So how much more so the different forms of vegetation that do not appear in the world distinct of one another at a distance from one another. So as they appeared, and they each appeared with the capacity to reproduce their own species exclusively, Hasach Sar Ha'olam, so in praise, the Sar Ha'olam, this highest of angels exclaimed, Yichved Hashem li'elam, Yismach Hashem amasov. Almighty will rejoice with the work of his hands. There is a Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Bo, and Yalkut Ruveni cites another message as well, this one and another one, in which he says as follows. Talks about the plague of Urav. And he asks, since every plague had a significance, what was the significance of the plague of Urav? And he gives two reasons. One is from a medrash Sheikh HaTayv in Tehillim, and one is from medrash Rav in Parshas Bo. Hevi aleihem Urav, the Urav. Why did he bring this plague of the mixed hordes of animals? Lefi sheheim hayu me'uvavim, because they were very mixed. The Egyptians themselves were me'urvav. What does that mean? They were me'urvav. Ish echad bar yud nashim. It was a very promiscuous society. One person would live with 10 different women, and 10 men would live with one woman. So, as a measure for measure, a midah keneged midah, because they were a society in which there was confusion, there were no relationships that were clear, children did not belong to any particular, could not be traced to any particular father, and all of this evil was taking place, so he brought upon them the mixed hordes. Now the Sheikh HaTevi that he quotes here is, Heriv aleihem Esam Eiris, he says, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, you sought to be Ma'arvev Zera Avram Ehavi, you wanted to mix the seed of my beloved Avram, ostensibly because they wanted to destroy all the male children so that the Egyptians would then intermarry and thereby destroy the line of Avram. Therefore, anima alva vecha minoil. Therefore, I will confuse you out of the world. So you see, it came as a direct response. The Arev came in response to Arev. Came to Avuvia in response to all kinds of Avuvia. So we have at least some beginning form taking place here. One is the fact that the vegetation enacted a piece of logic in order to prevent ilvuvia, so that each species would reproduce its kind, despite the fact that they grow in such close proximity to one another, that they would remain distinct and reproduce only their own kind. And the Arev came to avenge Yilvuv. They're both in response to confusion and the destruction of boundaries between husbands and wives, relationships, parents and children. There's the destruction of boundaries. The Zayar, rather famous Zayar, when he talks about the pasuk of the beginning of Shmais, where it talks about the way in which the Pharaoh worked the Jews, it says, Vayimachru es chayim, and they embittered their lives by Veda Kasha, hard work, b'chayma, of Yilvanim with mortar and bricks, and all of the work in the field, It's called Ridosim Ma'asharavdu Vehem Befarech. All that they did in the, was very rigorous. So, bring Zoya, which says, Aveda Kasha. That's where hard work refers to. Kushya refers to questions. Chema, where it talks about mortar, that refers to a kal v'chaymer, refers to this act of logic in which you derive a conclusion by inference from a lesser premise to a greater premise. B'chol avodah basada, the work in the fields, da b'raisa, that refers to the part of the Tirah Shebaal Peh, which is, the word b'raisa literally means outside. Bilvanim, with bricks, that means da libun hilchasa, it's the cleansing and the clarifying of the halacha. It's kalavidosam, that refers to the mission. And the Sfarim indicate that during the course of the bondage in Egypt, that Klal Yisrael was able to extricate these different logical approaches and these dimensions of the Torah Shebaal Peh, of the oral Torah, in the course of all of this bondage, one of which was the issue of Kal V'Chomer, of making an inference from a lesser to a greater premise, just as the grasses, the different vegetation did. They went from a lesser premise to the greater. They said, if in a case where we're talking about trees, and trees are so distinct of one another, they're so distant from one another, and yet God wanted each one to reproduce according to its own species, how much more so we who appear in the world in such close proximity and in such confusion with one another, how much more so ought we to be doubly cautious about maintaining our identity, about reproducing to our species. If the tree's got to be careful, and it's less likely that they're going to reproduce, not according to their kind, because they're distant from one another, then we are so close to one another, it's much easier to, as it were, interpollinate or whatever it is, so then for sure we need to be even more cautious about reproducing to our own, according to our own species. So it was an act of logic, an act of inference from a lesser to a greater premise. If it's less likely to happen, that's the case, then how much more so do you need to be careful where it's more likely to happen? This business about boundaries. It's an issue of being able to define, to establish clear distinctions between the important aspects of our lives. We make reference to them when we make Havdalah. We say, Hamavdil bin Kodesh Lecho. We thank Hashem who makes a Havdalah. He distinguishes between the sacred and the profane. Binu lachoshech, between light and darkness. Bin Yisrael amim, between Israel and the nations. Bin yom hashvi, the sheshet yemei ha'maaseh, between the seventh day, between Shabbos, and the 6 days of work. So we refer to four different kinds of havdalah, of distinction. And we might attribute those different aspects of Havdalah to the dimensions or the axes that are referred to when we speak about the fact that the world has these three fundamental dimensions called Olam, Shana, and Nefesh, which really refer to time, space, and soul. In time, we refer to Avdalah as Bein Yom HaShvi L'Sheish Siyamei HaMasa, between Shabbos and the weekday. That's a different quality of time. There's sacred time, there's Shabbos, and there's profane time. That's weekday. Anyway, that's Bein Yom HaShvi L'Sheish Siyamei HaMasa. In the soul of, in the area of soul, there's a difference between Israel and the nations. It's not an arbitrary distinction. There's a difference in the soul of the Jew and the soul of the non-Jew. That's the second Avdol. Between light and dark is really a distinction in space. The world space is filled with light or it's filled with darkness. And then we have the ways in which the soul can hallow itself, the way in which time is hallowed, the way in which space is hallowed, and that is Bein Kodesh L'Chol, the holy and the unholy. Kodesh and Chol are the dimensions which are the vehicle, the means by which the soul and time and space become holy or distant of holy. So you have really, what it really means is the presence of God or the lack thereof. So above the three dimensions of time and space and so we said, by the way, that Binela Choshech is space, the world is filled with light, with darkness, that above these three dimensions of Olam, Shana, Nefesh, there is God, the source of Kedusha. To the extent that he interacts with any dimension, there is Kodesh. To the extent that he does not interact with any one of these dimensions, there is Chol. We might also find these things in the Yomim Tovim. We have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. And these three Yomim Tovim correspond to Rosh Hashanah, is really the sanctification of time. It's the beginning of the year. Yom Kippur is the sanctification of the soul, of Nefesh. It's the day of cleansing, of forgiveness. It's the sanctification of Nefesh. And Sukkot represents the sanctification of space. In Pirkei Avos it says that the world stands on three things: on Din, on Shalom, and on Emes. Rosh Hashanah represents Yom HaDin, it's the Day of Judgment. That's the aspect of Kedushas HaZman. Yom Kippur represents Emes, where each person measures himself, confesses according to Emes.
That's Nefesh?
Huh?
That's Nefesh.
And Sukkot represents Shalom. Sukkot Shalom, it's a time of peace. We call it Sukkot Shalom. It's a time of Shalom.
And what is that?
And that's space. And of course, then every Erev Shabbos, the woman of the home lights the Neir Shabbos, which is our first Shalom Bayis, which represents the sanctification of space and brings peace into the home. It's also sanctification of time.
Right.
It's also sanctification of time. It's also sanctification of the person.
Right.
A Talmud Chacham person who is the personification of Torah, we say is always, the Zayar calls him Shabbos. Talmud Chacham is called Shabbos. He's in a constant state of Shabbos. One of the Svarim, forget which, says that last week we discussed Hillel and Shammai and their different attitudes towards Shabbos. Shammai used to, everything that would happen during the week that was beautiful, that was excellent, he would set it aside for Shabbos. Hillel would whenever something came along, he would sanctify it immediately. Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. So they say because Shammai, the Isaiah says that the halacha will be fixed according to Shammai in the world to come. So Shammai was always setting things aside for the future. Hillel was the ideal Talmud Chacham, so he was always b'vchina Shabbos. He was always in a state of Shabbos, so he could, in effect, take advantage of every day because he was in a constant state of Shabbos. In any event, I believe that there was one point many, many moons ago when I referred to the Kabbalah Svarim talk about the fact that Desha, Tadshe Haaretz Desha, let the world be clothed with Desha, with vegetation. That Desha represents an acronym. Acronym is not a skin condition. It's a metrikum. It's the using the letters to represent different words. Desha represents Din, Shalom, and Emes. So these three dimensions, Din, and Shalom, and Emes, all require Havdalah. They all require that we're able to discriminate between, in Nefesh, between the Jew and the non-Jew, that there's always something about the Jew which is different, which stands out. That in time, that we hallow time. That in space, that we fill the world with air rather than cheshech, and that in all cases the means by which we do this is hamavdil bein kodesh l'chol, by appealing to the source of kedusha. To the Egyptians, who refused to honor any kind of boundaries, it followed that they would wish to destroy any kind of definitive boundaries amongst their own kind, so that it wasn't clear that the ancestry and the parentage of the children wasn't clear, that the relationships between husbands and wives were perverted and confused. And they also sought to destroy, as the Medrash indicates, they also sought to destroy the difference between Klal Yisrael and the nations by trying to intermarry with them. So the response to that was Arav. Response to that was an attack of confusion, or hordes of different kinds of things, no boundaries, just everything in sheer confusion. In order for people to be able to make all of these necessary distinctions and discriminations, it's necessary for us not only to be able to tell the difference between that which is holy and that which is profane and so on in each one of the dimensions of Olam Shana and Nefesh, but there's yet another extremely essential dimension that we need to pay attention to, and that is that we need to know what our priorities are. We need to know the difference between what is important, very important, and which is less important, between that which is very significant, that which is less significant, between those things which are of extreme gravity and those things which are of lesser gravity. All of these things are necessary, because unless we know the difference between the important and the lesser important and the insignificant, unless we understand what our priorities are, important goals will be left unpursued and so on. So it's extremely important in the course of, in the scheme of all things, that not only do we understand the basic differentiation between sacred and not sacred, but that we also understand even within sanctity itself, we need to know the differences between the Kal and the Chomer. So this act of logic that we call a Kal v'Chomer, this act of logic in which we go from the simple to the complex, or from the lesser premise to the greater premise, is something which is part of this world of discrimination and distinction and clarity. When the when the Almighty created the world and created that which was to nurture the humanity, namely, in the main part, lechem, bread, that which is part of the world of Esav, he purposely left out the concept of the instructions of Lemineu, that it should be to its own species, in order that that which sustains and nurtures people would be something that would be a product of this act of Bechira, this act of clarity or clarification. So that, in a certain sense, man is nurtured by something that came into being through being able to discern the serious, the more serious, the less serious, the greater premise from the lesser premise, and on that basis, the difference: are we filling the world with light? Are we filling the world with darkness? Is there being Eir L'Choshech? Are we able to sanctify time? What do we do with our time? Do we fill our time? Do we capture time by doing good things with them? Do we capture? Do we waste time? Do we corrupt time? So the Shabbos is really an opportunity for us to recover our balance, for us to... it serves as the center of the week, which enables us once again to become an instrument that is capable of making all of these fine distinctions. All of this is captured by this parallelism that that the Psikta brings to our attention. On the one hand, it tells us that we must note that between the Asarim HaMorais and the Aseres HaDiburos, between the Ten Utterances and the Ten Commandments, there is this parallel. And the parallel between the Fourth Commandment and the Fourth Utterance is between the Diburav, hallowing the Shabbos, on the one hand, and the utterance, the Maimar of Tadshe Oretz Desha, which, as we just reviewed, was an act of Kal Vachomer, was an act of discrimination. And just as Desha sustains the physical, the Shabbos sustains the spiritual, the emotional, the intellectual. It's that which really keeps our eyes clear, enables us to see, and to distinguish between the many things that we see. And we can also understand the parallel now between the fourth dibur and the fourth plague, because Orev was a response to this mad confusion of animals, was a response to the ilvuv that Egypt tried to bring about between Israel and the Egyptians, and its general contempt for boundaries, with its rampant promiscuity. And the correspondence between that and bearing false testimony. Bearing false testimony means that you don't recognize the need to speak honestly about what you see. It's a breakdown in MS. It's a breakdown in Din. It's a breakdown in Shalom. It's a it's an attack on either seeing the truth, telling the truth, or appreciating the truth and its importance. So immediately opposite the Shabbos is Leisana the Reach Ve'Itshaker, do not bear false witness against your friend. And it's fairly certain that someone who violates or desecrates the Shabbos and has absolutely no idea that the Shabbos is there to enable him to create boundaries and to be able to distinguish between all of the make all the necessary discriminations, that person is going to be capable of the integrity that's necessary to testify honestly. They either will not testify honestly because they don't see things right, they won't testify honestly because they see no distinction between truth and falsehood, or they won't testify honestly because they have no appreciation for the centrality of truth. So it will either be a breakdown in Nefesh, or it will be a breakdown in Benyei Mashvi L'Shesh Simei Maaser, it will be a breakdown in Benor L'Choshech. So, in the third dimension, which is the correspondence between Shabbos
and Lo Son of Reach, Eid Shaka, there is a very direct link. And when the Psikta tells us that if we want to understand the Aser Sedibris, that we also need to understand how they correspond to the Aser Mamois and the Aser Makis, as well as the their companions on the Luchais, we have through all of them, we have a means of getting a better handle on what Shabbos is really there to do on our behalf. And the Shabbos is there to enable us to see things more clearly. And as we see things more clearly, to be able to maintain all of the most significant distinctions in our lives, the ones that are b'nei l'cheshech v'nisrol amim v'nei m'ashvi l'shesh simen l'asim.